1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, Justin Fields, the name of the starting quarterback. We'll break it all down in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Dave Wills, the radio voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. We talk with him about some Rays baseball preview, the 2021 MLB postseason, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs. He's been very helpful, getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no game with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Find him online at brianismyagent.com. That's brianismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. Leverage. It's a pretty powerful tool. Don't need me to tell you that. You could force someone to do anything, even if they don't want to do it, you have leverage over them. You have leverage over your employer. Chances are you're going to get a raise, and a pretty hefty one, too. So my question is, who has leverage over Matt Nagy? Pretty fair question. I mean, it was only a couple of weeks ago that Matt Nagy said Justin Fields would never play. It was only last week that Matt Nagy said Andy Dalton is still the starter. What changed his mind? Really a big question. What changed his mind? Who has leverage over Matt Nagy? And we all know what the answer is. But it's the principle that's questioning. Why did it take this long? Why did the Bears wait from week one to today to decide, oh, you know what, it's Justin Fields' time now? Why was there no pressure mounted until now? We may never get the answers to any of these questions, but they're fun to talk about. I have a feeling inside Hallis Hall, Matt Nagy's in big trouble. Because if you go as a coach from there's no way he's playing to, oh, he's the starting quarterback for real, forever, well, obviously someone told him something. Like, for example, hey, Matt, you keep pulling this crap, you're going to be fired. So whomever stood up and told Matt Nagy to essentially take a seat, good for you. Because now it's Justin Fields' time. Justin Fields has been named the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears. He will start this weekend in Las Vegas against the Raiders, the 3-1 Raiders. Here's a quote from an article from the NFL, quote, Matt Nagy has seen the light. Nagy reversed course on Wednesday, taking the action most everyone hoped to see and Bears fans wanted by naming rookie Justin Fields the team's starting quarterback moving forward. Quote, he's done everything to show us that he's ready for this opportunity. Sure. Sure. I just said this a couple of days ago. If Justin Fields performs like Andy Dalton, the same or better, it's obviously time to put him in. And I'm not saying Fields has done great. I mean, you look at his numbers right now, they're pretty scary, to be honest. Very scary. 48.1% completion percentage. No touchdowns, two picks. 54 rating. It's not good. But he has time to make that better. I'm not going to sit here and say Justin Fields is going to be a great quarterback. Not yet. He's talented. But I will say this. I can't wait to see how this all works out now. No more flip-flopping. No more switching back and forth. There's no more, oh, he could be the starter, he might not be. There's no more quarterback controversy. No more. It's over. It's all on his shoulders. Depends on how he takes that. Some people love that, and some do not at all. There's no more coddling. There's no more excuses. He is the starting quarterback. We're going to have to see growth from Justin Fields to justify whether or not he's a good quarterback, whether or not he's ready for the NFL. There's nothing controversial about saying that. Doesn't mean we're going to judge him right away, but it does mean that if he can't perform as the known starter, well, there's a problem. You all went after Mitch Trubisky. Way too much, in my opinion. So I hope we see the same fair coverage for Justin Fields. I have my doubts about that. It's going to be tough for him this weekend, too. Raiders are no joke. 3-1 team. Very good. Derek Carr is the best quarterback in football right now. That's a fact. One of the best. Top five. They have Peyton Barber and Josh Jacobs running the football. Kenyon Drake, too. They have a good running game. A really good passing game. I don't expect the Bears win. Just so we're clear, because this has been the mantra of mine since the very beginning, this season is not about wins. And really, this move by the Bears further proves that. We are not looking for wins. We're not looking for 10-7, wild card appearance, playoff appearance. No, we're looking for development. Bears are 2-2 right now. They could finish 6-11, like I predicted. But if Justin Fields shows growth by being named the starter, to me, it's a great season. So the key is growth here. It's not measuring wins and losses. We're going to be outraged if the Bears completely blow a game. Yes, of course. But we're not here to judge wins and losses. We're here to judge, is Justin Fields truly the quarterback of the future? Everyone says yes, even though he's barely played, but here's the chance to prove it. That's what I'm looking forward to. Here's his chance to prove it. No more excuses. No more, well, he really isn't the starter. No, he's going to play. And to my knowledge, Bill Lazor is still going to call plays. So no more Matt Nagy getting in the way. So there really is going to be no excuse for the way he performs now. It's going to be all on Fields. Could be a bit scary. But if he performs, I'll have no reservations. I want the Bears to have a good quarterback. It's been way too long. They traded up to get him. Again. So, hell, it better work. Very curious to see how it plays out. He won't have David Montgomery. Montgomery's going to be out for a couple of weeks with that knee injury. It's going to depend on Damian Williams and Khalil Herbert for the running. Not a bad tandem, considering. Damian Williams actually averaging 4.6 yards per carry so far. Works for me. He has a competent run game. Still, not his number one guy, but a competent run game. Darnell Mooney's looked good recently. Allen Robinson's been quiet, but maybe he'll turn it on. No offensive line, but we already knew that. And no Matt Nagy. It seems like a much better situation for Justin Fields to succeed. I'm not saying it's perfect. And again, not every situation is. Look at the other rookies around the league. Who's succeeding and who isn't? Who is a good situation and who doesn't? Trevor Lawrence, bad situation. Clueless coach, bad season. Zach Wilson, no weapons, no O-line, new coach, bad season. Mac Jones, good coach, all right weapons, good protection, decent season. Justin Fields, now he gets a chance to start. So here it is. I know he made great throws last week, I get it. But I want to see more. I want to see 100 passer rating. I want to see 2 touchdowns, no picks, and 300 yards. That's what we were promised, right? All of you said Patrick Mahomes. Well, let's see it. And no, this isn't me giving him hate. I genuinely want to see it happen. Because it's a fact that last week, that's not going to fly every game. Fortunately, the Bears won the game, but 11 of 17, no touchdowns, one pick, 200 yards. That's literally what Andy Dalton did week one. I'm just saying. It's not going to fly every week. It'll fly in the games you win, but in the games you lose, you're going to be the goat. Not the good kind either. So the question is, can he rise to the occasion? I know everybody's so excited. Everybody's kissing his butt about, oh, hey, he didn't go out to celebrate. He stayed in and watched film, and that's nice. Let's see it translate to the field, though, before we crown him the king. You're such a negative, Nancy. No, I'm not. I'm a realist. And I've seen Bears football. I know how this works. The Bears have always drafted good quarterbacks, or good ones out of college, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But this team here, they still don't have an offensive line. It's going to be a problem. The only positive right now going for Fields is that Matt Nagy is no longer calling plays. See how funny it is that he switched his position? This is comical at this point, isn't it? I mean, seriously. You go from week one, Justin Fields is sitting. Not ready, never going to play him. Then you're forced to put him in. Then he does bad. Okay, Andy's our starter. Put him in again. He did all right, but I still think Andy's the starter. Now all of a sudden today, Justin Fields is our number one guy. Who has leverage over Matt Nagy? That's all you got to do. Who has leverage over Matt Nagy? The minute you realize that his job's in trouble, the minute you understand why Justin Fields is going to be starting on Sunday. By the way, I predicted this before the season. I did. I said they're going to start with Dalton. Nagy's going to be in trouble. Then he'll turn to Fields to save the season and probably his job. There you go. Funny part is, Matt Nagy's done nothing to help his status right now. The Bears don't even need it. He's relinquished play calling duties. He's the one who delayed Justin Fields. They're 2-2. Probably going to be much worse at season's end. What has he done to justify him getting a new contract or staying with the team? Not integral. Unnecessary. Now look at him. He's a puppet. Can't even make his own decisions. Now the front office has him hostage, which is the way it should be, because I wouldn't trust Matt Nagy with anything. But the point is, he has no control. Come on, what would compel you to go from week one, Justin is not starting, even last Monday, to say, oh, well, we don't know who the starting quarterback's going to be, to now, oh, it's Justin for sure. No chance he came to that on his own. Which means his opinion doesn't matter anymore. And if that's the case, well, you know what that means. Probably shouldn't be here anymore, either. That's an indictment on Nagy. This entire situation with Fields, with Dalton, with play calling is an entire indictment on Nagy. The whole thing. This is the second time now we've seen flip-flopping on quarterbacks. Trubisky, Foles, Fields, Dalton. So the guy can't even control a quarterback, can't control the most important position in football, has had to give up play calling now on 2 separate occasions. And now really isn't making the decisions on who even starts at quarterback anymore. My gosh, talk about a red flag. And I know the narrative is going to be now, hey, Justin Fields is playing, and that's great. But don't forget about this step. Matt Nagy screwed this all up. Nothing is definite here for him, for his job future. And to me, right now, it's not looking good. The Bears could even win, and it wouldn't look good. Because guess what? He's not calling the plays, and he was the one who messed around with Fields and Dalton. From now on, the Bears will win in spite of Matt Nagy, not because of him. Got to remember that. I'm curious to see how Fields does. Really, I am. This is a big point for the organization and a big point for their future here. No more excuses. Seriously, no more. Matt Nagy's not calling plays. You have a good team or decent enough. Now it's on you, rookie. Make us proud. There will be growing pains. There will be bad throws, fumbles, interceptions, mistakes. But the question is, will he grow? Will he show growth from today to week 18? If he does, well, nothing to worry about. If he doesn't, could be a Matt Nagy problem, or could be a Justin Fields problem, too. That's what you have to worry about. Don't evaluate this season based on wins and losses. Now, if Justin Fields wills this team to the playoffs, great. I'll be the first one to be happy and give him praise. But do not expect it. Don't expect, oh, we're going to the playoffs now. No. What you need to expect is, will Justin Fields improve? He has time. No Matt Nagy. Is he going to improve? Will he show to everybody that, yes, he could be the franchise quarterback, or no? No way. That's the question. My fear is that everyone's going to get caught up in playoffs and other sorts of things that really don't matter. Record, wins. It's all about Fields here. All about what he's capable of doing with this team. Just to let you know, too. Want to make sure I put this out there. You look at the numbers, Andy Dalton's a much better quarterback at this moment than Justin Fields. I'm just saying. And that's not controversial. That's numbers right here in front of me. Andy Dalton's passer rating is 30 points higher than Justin Fields. Better completion percentage, more touchdowns. That doesn't mean I'm a big Andy Dalton supporter. That doesn't mean I'm trashing Fields, but I'm just telling you the truth. Now, Justin Fields had bad play calling. He's a rookie, younger. Cut him a little bit of slack. But now with Bill Lazor, here's his chance to shine. I want the best for him. I want the best for this team. I'm sick of seeing bad quarterback play. Do me one favor. Don't get your hopes too high. I said this last week on my appearance with Hannah and Fred on the Hannah and Fred Show. Don't be comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. Don't be saying, oh, here we go. He's a great quarterback. Don't anoint him too early. Let him play. They're going to be growing pains, and you're going to have to deal with that, too. Let's see how he works. That's all. There's a lot of time this season. There's a lot of time for his career to develop. And the Bears gave Mitch Trubisky 4 years. This is not going to be an overnight thing. This is not even going to be a one-year thing, really. We just need to see some sort of improvement. If he can end the year with an 80 passer rating, 85, right around Mitch's numbers, fine. And next year, maybe it could be 95 or 100. Then we're talking about a franchise guy. There's a ways to go. So my hope, my suggestion, is that we don't sit here and ask the world of some rookie when you just threw him in. And that we hold him accountable when he makes mistakes. You know, Mike North said it best when the Bears drafted him. He said, Justin Fields will put up similar numbers to Mitch Trubisky. They'll make a statue for Fields and do nothing for Mitch. He's not wrong. As of today, he's not wrong. Justin Fields has a 53 passer rating, and everyone's saying, here we go. So excited. If Mitch Trubisky had a 50 passer rating, well, you know the rest. I'm cautiously optimistic. I really do believe he has the skill set to do well. He's a physical specimen, plain and simple. Question is, does he have the mental capacity to get through an NFL game, a full NFL game, and succeed? Does he have an offensive line to protect him? And will Matt Nagy get in his way again? I really don't get how he's still employed. Literally known to be a quarterback breaker now, and he's just here. Fine. Broke Mitch Trubisky, who cares? Breaking Justin Fields, that's okay. Why he still has a job, I am really unsure about. Maybe it's blackmail or something with the front office. I don't get it. Funny part is, though, front office is blackmailing him. What did I say to open up the show? Leverage. a pretty powerful tool. It can make you make some crazy decisions. To go from, no, Justin Fields should never play, to, oh, hey, he's our quarterback now. I really hope you don't believe, oh, Matt Nagy came to some great conclusion. No! He was told to say that, told to do that. Probably told him, hey, man, you don't do this stuff, you're done. And the fact that Matt Nagy has to take orders from the front office already should go to show you that his job's in big trouble. He needs a playoff appearance to stay. Or at least, I don't know, some sort of development from Justin Fields. But even if Fields develops, it's not going to be to Nagy's credit. It'll be to Bill Lazor. So, a lot of big issues for Matt Nagy moving forward. But who cares? I don't. Frankly, I don't. He gets fired, he gets fired. Been given more than enough opportunities to keep his job. He's been told numerous times what to do. And he never listens. So, doesn't matter to me. What matters now, Justin Fields, this team, this Sunday. It's going to be a tough game. I don't expect a win. Raiders are a very good football team. Raiders will win. But can Justin Fields put on a show? Can he at least control the ball more than anything? Can he control the football, not turn it over, maybe put up a touchdown, 200 yards, no picks? Fine by me. That's improvement already. Not turning the ball over is a great sign of maturity for a rookie quarterback. That's something you really got to look out for this weekend. That said, I'm happy the move was made. And I really hope that Fields succeeds. But remember, judge him based off improvement. Hold him accountable when he makes mistakes. And realize that Matt Nagy has nothing to do with this. His job as of today is in big trouble. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Dave Wills comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the radio voice of the Tampa Bay Rays and the Chicagoland native. Please welcome Dave Wills to the program. Dave, it's great to have you on. How are you?
John, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
How's it feel to call playoff baseball?
It never gets old. As a matter of fact, it gets very, very disappointing when you've done it for a few years in a row now, like we have. This will be our third straight season. And like I told Andy back in 2008, my only little taste of it was when I was doing pregame and postgame with the White Sox, and we made it in 2000. Unfortunately, got swept by the Seattle Mariners, two games at on the south side, and then the one and only game we played in Seattle. But then the very next year, 2001, we didn't go. It was very, very disappointing, and it was kind of tough to watch some of the other teams that you thought you might have been as good as, or maybe even better than, and not make it to the postseason. And then I didn't go again until 2008. When I was with the Tampa Bay Rays, and you know, had a nice run there, made it all the way to the World Series, and then in 2009, another year off, and you don't know what to do with the extra time. So it's, you know, the good news is I know what I'm going to be doing here for the next 4 or 5 days. The bad news is that they told my wife our vacation plans or whatever we have planned for the off season are put on hold right now.
Did you have any plans? Did you know, like, okay, the Rays are making the playoffs, I got to make sure I clear up my schedule for this week or two?
No plan. This, you know, going back to the beginning of the year, I told my wife that I feel we're going to probably do as much postseason as we did a year before, which made it all the way to the World Series. I thought that this team had a chance to be really good and maybe even better when some of the young players started infiltrating the roster, which it has happened. And she knew not to make any October plans. So we've already kind of penciled in a couple of things for early November, but right now nothing is on the agenda except baseball for the month of October.
Abe, how'd this team win 100 games?
Well, I think what's the old saying, and I always mess it up. It's the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I really think that's the case. I mean, if you start looking around, and yes, we do have some very, very good players. We have a 100 RBI guy in Austin Meadows, a 99 RBI guy in Brandon Lau. We've got maybe a future Hall of Famer in Nelson Cruz that we picked up, maybe a future Hall of Famer in Wander Franco. Even though the poor kid's only been around for about 70 games. And then you've got some very good players like Joey Wendell and Randy Rosarena. Kevin Kiermaier can go catch him with the best of them. Mike Zunino hit over 30 homers. So I guess as I'm saying all that, I guess you start to add up why this team won 100 games. And then on the pitching side, you know, you go back to June 15th in a ball game on the south side of Chicago, and Tyler Glasnow leaves early. And at that particular time, I don't think anybody within the organization would have been able to say, all right, he's not going to pitch for the rest of the year, and yet you're going to win 100. But somehow, some way, they maneuvered their way through it. I think at the end of the day, close to 40 pitchers threw a baseball for the Tampa Bay Rays. I think 23 different guys had wins, 14 different guys had saves. It speaks to the depth of the team, the 26 players that are on the active roster, but it also speaks to the depth of the organization, what we have in Durham, what we had down in Montgomery. When you think that Shane Baz started the season in Montgomery is going to be pitching in game two of the American League Division Series. So when you look at the Rays organization, every team made it to the postseason. I think they won over 450 games or something like that from top to bottom. It's a very, very thick organization. And going back to the middle part of the year when I was wondering if we were going to make any trades or move some people, I had said, well, our window is only going to be open for a short period of time. They felt, and they probably were true, that our window was not open yet. But obviously, we've cracked it open a bit, bringing guys like Baz and Wander up and so on. But I think when you start to add it up, this team just had a will to win, found different ways to win. And at the end of the day, in the American League East, where, what, three other teams won over 90 games, they won 100. I think that speaks volume about how good the Tampa Bay Rays really are.
What's their main driver for success?
Being able to adapt to the situation. Obviously, we were a pitching and defense first organization. We have been since 2008. Our thought process going back to Andrew Friedman when he was the general manager was that we are probably not going to be able to outslug the Red Sox and the Yankees. And for that matter, as the years went on, the Orioles and even the Blue Jays. But we can prevent runs with the best of them. That's what we started to do. We prevented runs by putting together a real good pitching staff and also playing very, very elite defense. And I think we did that for a long, long time, even to a first stretch into last year. When you think about the big three that we had, Blake Snell, Charlie Morton, and Tyler Glasnow at the front end of the rotation. And then at the back end of the rotation, or back end of the bullpen, he had arguably one of the best relievers nobody heard of in Nick Anderson, who might have been one of the best relievers, period. You also had Diego Castillo do some nice things. Pete Fairbanks was really good. And, you know, and then even Ryan Thompson, who was a rookie last year, did some really, really nice things. So we played elite defense. We pitched it well. And unfortunately, we just didn't hit enough when we played the Dodgers in the World Series. So that was the formula we brought in to 2021. And I think around June 15th, when Tyler Glasnow went down, I think our thought process was, you know what? We're going to have a tough time beating teams 3-1 and 4-2 now. We're going to probably have to figure out ways to beat teams 5-3 and 6-4. And we went out and picked up Nelson Cruz. We brought up Wander Franco. And when those two guys are in the lineup, this lineup averages over 6 runs a ball game. And, wow. You know, I was listening to a couple of people talk yesterday. And, you know, and again, reputation is a big, big part of it. But they were talking about the vaunted Yankee offense and how, you know, how did the Red Sox shut down the vaunted Yankee offense. The Rays scored over 100 more runs than the New York Yankees. We don't get the publicity that those teams do, but you know, again, when you look at Nelson Cruz and Wander Franco, when they were in the same lineup, we were averaging almost 6.5 runs a ball game. You're going to win a lot of baseball games when your team scores that much.
You know, it's funny too. I talked to you the day before the trade deadline, the last time we caught up, and you told me the Rays are going to be looking for an impact bat, and they ended up getting Nelson Cruz. How important was that move, and what's been your evaluation of him?
You know what? I'd have to put my glasses on and look at his stats right now in front of me. But, you know, he's been an incredible presence. You know, I think he hit only about 230 with us with about 13 home runs and 38 runs batted in. But his presence in the lineup, I think, allowed Brandon Lowe to see different pitches and allowed Brandon to relax. The next thing you know, he took off and hit almost 40 homers and 100 runs batted in. He had an incredible second half. I think it allowed Randy Arozarena to relax a little bit. And I think it lengthened out our lineup. So instead of Randy having to bat fourth or fifth and maybe feel like he had to be a big run producer, a lot of times we move Randy down to the sixth or seventh spot, and I think it allowed him to relax. Same thing with Austin Meadows, who moved around a little bit in the lineup. And then Wander Franco, obviously, coming up. And I think Wander right now is probably a top 20 player, if not even higher than that, in Major League Baseball. That's how good this kid is now. And I'm just kind of anxious to see, if he doesn't get hurt, how good he's going to be going down the line. But, you know, and Nelson brought a presence with him at the plate and into the clubhouse. And I think one of the things we saw a couple of different times was there was a moment early on, right in Cleveland when we picked them up, where Randy Arozarena and Nelson Cruz were sitting next to each other on the bench. And one of the coaches said that they were locked in conversation for about four innings. And it wasn't one of those moments where, you know, the youngster was looking at other things or looking out to the crowd or reading his, you know, Instagram. He was locked in to what Nelson Cruz was saying. So Nelson's been a big, big part of the Rays' success here in the second half.
Dave Wells here on Sports Talk Chicago. Dave, how do you think the Rays fare in the division series here?
Well, you know, everybody's been asking me, you know, going into the Red Sox-Yankee game, who do you want? Who do you want? I know that, you know, we spent a lot of time here the last few weeks of the regular season trying to figure who would be a better matchup. And I think at the end of the day, we all figured that any of the five teams or six teams that are going to make it to the postseason, five teams are going to be teams that probably out of the American League could go all the way. The Red Sox present some problems. We have had some issues, even with the acquisition of Nelson Cruz and Wander Franco, with some left-handed pitching. Now, our winning percentage is still in the mid-50s, but it's like 65, 66% when we play against right-handed pitching. But Wander's going to have to be a big, big part of our offense. We're going to need to get Randy Arozarena and a couple of other right-handed hitters that are really going, Yandy Diaz, in addition to Nelson Cruz, against these lefties between Eduardo Rodriguez and Chris Sale that we're going to see with the Red Sox. And then we've had trouble with Pivetta. We've had trouble with Eovaldi a couple of different times this year. So we're going to have our hands full. I think we can handle them offensively. I think our pitching staff has done a really, really good job of holding them down. We got swept by them in the first week of the season in Boston and lost the first game, I think it was, at Tropicana Field. We played them back in the early part of the season. And then I think I saw a note that we won 11 of the last 15 matchups against them here during the regular season. I might be off on my numbers a little bit, but I'm going by memory, if memory serves. So they're going to present their problems. But, you know, again, I think we went through a nice little dress rehearsal here over the last week by going on the road prior to the season ending, playing three hard-fought games in Houston in front of over 30,000 fans each game there, and then going to the Bronx and taking two out of three from the Yankees and playing in front of over 40,000 fans on a nightly basis in that particular ballpark. So I think our guys are ready. The Trop is ready, and really looking forward to figure out a way to beat the Red Sox again after we beat them in 08, but they were able to get us in 13.
Are you concerned about the starting pitching lasting in a five-game or seven-game series in this postseason?
I'm not too concerned about our starting pitching. I'm more concerned right now about the back end of our bullpen. I asked Kevin Cash that question about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, about our pitching, and he said, outside of Shane McClanahan and Shane Baz and probably Drew Rasmussen, we're going to get very, very creative. So there could be some moments where we're going to back up maybe a Shane Baz and get him four or five innings and then bring in Luis Patino, who can throw 98, 99, and kind of keep that going. I haven't seen our roster yet. I would imagine that our roster is going to be held up until the very, very last moment they can submit it. I know how we operate. So, you know, there could be some Michael Wacha sightings. He was very intriguing the last handful of starts, and also the couple of times we brought him in at the middle of games where, again, just empty out what you got. Don't try and pace yourself at 94, 95. He would show up with 96, 97. With a real good changeup and do some damage. But I'm a little worried about the back end of our bullpen right now. I'm not sure Nick Anderson's going to be available. He's been battling an elbow problem all year long. And when we did get him back, his velo was just down. Instead of being 95, 96, it was 93. And it didn't quite have the same run at the top of the zone that he had that made him an elite reliever. Pete Fairbanks has had some bumps in the road here over the last couple of months, dealing with some shoulder problems. Again, Andrew Kittredge has been absolutely outstanding, but all right, we used him an awful lot. And you start to wonder, all right, this is going to be his first foray where he's going to be the guy out of the bullpen. And how is he going to do? Is the slider starting to flatten out? Same thing with Colin McHugh. So last year, I felt really, really good going into the postseason about our final four guys. This year, there's been some bumps here as we're trying to bring this plane into the World Series title. And maybe, you know, again, once the lights turn on for the postseason, these guys get some additional energy. But we had some problems holding leads in the first part of the season for about the first two or three weeks. We didn't have any problem for the rest of the season until about the last month. This month of September has been a little bit bumpy at times. And that's why our offense is, instead of maybe trying to win a game 2-1, like I said, we're going to have to try and win the games 5-2 or 5-3.
If the Rays end up winning, Dave, how far do you see them going?
I can see us going all the way to the end. I really could. I think with the days off mixed in, I think that's what really cost us last year. I think the Dodgers, at the end of the day, were a better team. I'm never going to sit here and say they weren't. But I think at the end of the day, because there weren't any days off in the ALDS, we went to that Nick Anderson move in Game 5. and you know, started Tyler Glasnow. Then went to Nick Early, asked him to go multiple innings, and I just don't know if he ever recovered from that. We, you know, he started to not have any swing and miss in the Houston series, and then he really didn't have the swing and the miss at all in the Dodgers series. But again, I think our depth, with some days off, is going to, you know, come through. I feel like we are, you know, maybe not as good on the pitching side, but I think we're much, much better on the offensive side than we were a year ago. And I think that, again, when you start to look at some of the other teams around Major League Baseball, and you combine the fact that we play still a very, very good defense, I think we have a chance to go all the way. Just a lot of things have to fall, have to fall your way too. And, you know, when you get moments to take advantage of them, you got to take advantage of them. I know last year, especially in the World Series, but even throughout most of the playoffs, we were not very good with runners in scoring position. We were Randy Arozarena and then RISP leaving runners in scoring position a lot. We need to come through. When those opportunities arise, I think we need to take a lot more advantage of them this year than we did last year.
What do you think happens if they meet the White Sox? How do you envision a series like that going?
You know what? I think our offense can match up a little bit better with the White Sox than it did maybe back in early June. We did not have Wander. We did not have Nelson Cruz. Obviously, you know, you look at some of their power pitchers. Carlos Rondon, if he's healthy, can really present a lot of problems with us because he is a very, very good pitcher, and he's left-handed. We've always had trouble with Lance Lynn, although I think we did get him a little bit last time. And same thing with Lucas Giolito. So, you know, they're a very, very good team. You know, last time we saw them at Tropicana Field, we were able to win that series. But a big part of it was because after Nick Anderson kind of, you know, took over the first game of that series, he had to miss the next couple. And, you know, they're a very, very good baseball team on the south side. I have some questions, too, about some of their bullpen guys as to how they're going to react in the postseason. And, you know, you would have thought that – I would have thought anyway that after picking up Craig Kimbrel that that bullpen would have been totally shut down for the last several weeks of the season. But obviously they had a few bumps trying to get the ball to Hendricks at times. So they're a good team. They're going to have their hands full, though, with the Houston Astros, because I personally think that when you look at the Astros lineup from 1-7, when they're all in there, it's about as thick of a lineup as you're going to run into. And, you know, obviously their pitching can be pretty darn good too. Now their bullpen, I think, is a little sketchy at times, especially with right now, Ryan Pressly's been battling a little bit of a sore knee at the back end of it. But you know, again, you sneak one out in Houston, you got a chance to have a little fun there in that series.
How epic would a Rays Astros rematch be for this year?
You know, I said, you be careful what you wish for, right? You know, everybody was asking me who I want, the Yankees, the Red Sox. You know, we'd love to, you know, we've done our thing with the Astros. They beat us in 19 in a 5-game series. We were able to beat them last year in a 7-game series in San Diego. I'd be ready for some new blood. But at the end of the day, you know, again, they're a good team. We had some fun with them this year, both at our place and at their place just recently. So, you know, Dusty's a guy that, you know, likes the spotlight. Our guy, Kevin's a little more, likes to be in the background. But, you know, again, hey, whoever, if we beat the Red Sox, I don't care who we play in the American League Championship Series, as long as we, you know, again, get another chance for a ring. And this time we get the big one instead of, you know, the bridesmaid ring again.
Who do the Braves face in the World Series if they make it?
You know, I mean, again, watching tonight's game is going to be kind of interesting because the Dodgers are a very, very good team. But I haven't really been able to – I've watched a number of, like, San Francisco Giant games at the end, like the last, you know, two or three innings when I get back from a game and flip through the channels and put on some of the games on my baseball package here. But, you know, they're very good. I think from a fan standpoint here at Tropicana Field and in St. Petersburg and Tampa, some people are pointing to the Milwaukee Brewers. They want to see Willie Adames again. They loved Willie Adames, and, you know, you look at that situation, too. When you think about the family tree right now with the Rays, it's loaded with ex-Rays. You've got, you know, Andrew Friedman, the guy who started it all out in Los Angeles. You've got our guy, Eric Neander, now running the Rays. Heim Bloom, he's running the Boston Red Sox. James Click is with the Houston Astros. And then Matt Arnold's the vice president and general manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. So I think from a standpoint of what Dave Wills would like, I think I'd kind of enjoy maybe a nice little trip to Milwaukee and mix in a trip maybe to Kenosha for a brat stop or whatever, and you know, be able to kind of enjoy a little Midwest fall while trying to win a World Series.
How'd you celebrate? How would you celebrate if they won it all?
Wow. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we're, you know, we, I don't know if we take a page out of the out of the Buccaneers book and the Lightning book and have a boat parade like they've had the last couple of off seasons, where those look to be just absolute great times. And, you know, people are out there on the riverfront and in downtown Tampa having a blast. We've got a, you know, two city kind of tale. We also operate full time out of St. Petersburg. So do we start the party in St. Pete and then go across the bay and go to Tampa? I don't know how we plan on it, but it'd be a nice problem to have. But obviously there'd be a few beverages involved and some of my favorite stops and hangouts here where I live in North Tampa up in Lutz. They've all been big Rays fans and they've all really, really been behind us and behind me as far as listening to games and, you know, giving us some pep talks when we needed. Thankfully, when you win 100 games, you don't need that many of them. But I think I'd be more celebrating with for the fans. I know that Rays fans take a lot of unfair hits because of the fact that, you know, attendance is so low at Tropicana Field. But as I probably said on this program many, many times, there are more Rays fans than people want to believe outside of the cities of Tampa, St. Pete, and Clearwater. I mean, our TV numbers, again, were really, really good. Our radio numbers have been fantastic again this year. You know, our social media hits are top and near the top in baseball. So there's a lot of good things going on outside of not being able to get fannies more consistently in the seats at Tropicana Field. But they've opened up the upper deck for this postseason. I'm expecting on the other side of 30,000 for at least the first two games against the Boston Red Sox. And a majority of the fans will be Rays fans, which is also good. So I'm hoping that these guys get a chance to celebrate because they're calling this area Champa Bay. We have the Super Bowl champs, the Stanley Cup champs, and the American League champs. I'm hoping that we can add World Series champs to that list come in a few weeks.
More to come with Dave Wells in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Dave Wells, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Dave, two more questions before we finish out. First off, the most intense playoff baseball moment you've been a part of is what?
Well, I probably have to call two of them. You know, obviously, you know, when your first World Series is first chance to go to the World Series is 2008. We go to Game 7 against the Boston Red Sox. They had just did the same thing the year before to the Cleveland Indians, where I think they had fallen behind 3-1. One game five, one game six, and then one game seven to go on to the World Series. We had a 7-0 lead in game five at Fenway Park in the seventh inning and lost it, lost that game. It went from a 3-1 lead, or actually the champagne was on ice, to now leading the series 3-2, come back to Tropicana Field for game six and kind of are flat and beat up a little bit, lose that game. And now we go into a game seven. And, you know, here we are. It's a winner take all kind of game. And I remember, all right, now we get to the ninth inning and we're leading 3-1 and I'm calling the final play on radio as far as, all right, this is it. We win it. We go to the World Series. And I can just remember, again, being all tensed up and all, you know, flared up and ready to go. And you know, for a game seven, that's about as tense as you're ever going to find in any sport. And, you know, I tried to tell my wife beforehand that this is fun. This is what it's all about. And then you actually get involved in it. And, you realize that you could have slept for about 10 days after it was all done. But calling the final play of the ALCS in 2008 against the Red Sox was probably the most tense. And then the craziest, obviously, was last year in game four. Andy was doing the play-by-play in that particular play. I was offering the color. But, you know, again, the ball is kicked out to right center field. Chris Taylor kicks it around. Kiermaier scores the tying run. Then you've got Randy Arozarena coming around. And I remember standing up in the booth and being the third base coach and waving him home. And then he falls down and I'm like, ah, and then he gets back up and he scores. And I just, you know, pumping the fist, going nuts. And that was probably the most animated I've ever been probably for a call in my time as a broadcaster.
And Dave, before we finish up today, last question, how do you tie your shoes?
I'm a bunny ears guy. I've always been a bunny ears guy. I could not figure it out as a young kid on how to tie the shoes with the one loop and then wrap it around and bring it through. I don't know. I guess I wasn't coordinated enough. So then I had an aunt who showed me how to do the bunny ears, and I've been a bunny ears guy ever since. Even at age 57 now, where I still try to maybe do it the way that, I don't know, maybe is it a majority? 90% of the people do it. I still have a tough time doing it. So bunny ears it is. It's quick, it's clean, and it does the job.
Two bunny ears, guys, right here on Sports Talk Chicago. Dave, thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate it. Best wishes for the playoffs, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. Thank you so much.
I hope I'm busy through October and we get to do this again. Sure. Thanks.
Great talk there with Dave Wills, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Dave Wills himself, Matt Dubio, WCKG, Jim DeTalbot, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?